Number 1. Science thrives on the free exchange of ideas and on intellectual competition. It starts to lose its vitality when, as happened in the Middle Ages under the Catholic Church and under Stalin in the Soviet Union, an outside authority tries to force on scientists a theory that it thinks is right, but which is not based on the work of the discipline. In the 19th century, some geneticists argued that characteristics that individuals acquired during their lifetimes could be passed on through their genes. Among these was the French biologist Lamarck, who, discussing the evolution of the giraffe in his famous Zoological Philosophy, 1809, stated that it owed its long neck to the habit of stretching to feed on tree leaves. The case presented by Darwin 50 years later, on the other hand, supposed that long-neckedness was a quality already fixed in genes, and that those giraffes that possessed it had a better chance of survival than those that did not. So according to Darwin's theory, a gene pool changes through natural selection rather than learning. By the 1920s, Lamarck's model had been largely abandoned. However, it survived in the Soviet Union, where the natural selection alternative was thought to be too close to the logic of capitalism and hence politically unacceptable. The Soviet biologist Lysenko used his political position to have Lamarckism incorporated in official communist philosophy, and those geneticists who opposed him were either forced to publicly take back their views or punished by being sent to Siberia. Only in the 1950s did Soviet biology recover from Lysenko's influence.
Number 2. In many countries, organ transplants are considered the most appropriate treatment for patients with incurable diseases of vital organs, such as the heart and liver. In June 1997, Japan legalized organ transplants from brain-dead donors, and the first transplants were performed in 1999. During the first 3 years after legalization, however, only 4 such transplants were performed, though there were numerous potential recipients. One obstacle facing the medical community is that the law does not define brain death as human death, yet only allows brain-dead patients to donate organs. Even now, many Japanese are uncomfortable with the idea of removing organs from a body with a beating heart, even if the brain is not functioning. As a result, no national consensus on brain death has been reached, and organs are in short supply. To cope with this shortage, animal organs, such as baboon and pig livers, can be used. In the U.S., more than 30 animal-to-human transplants have been performed since 1963. Obstacles remain, however. The body can reject the organ or contract an animal disease, and some people oppose such transplants for ethical reasons.
Number 3.
The objectives of AI, artificial intelligence, are to imitate by means of machines, normally electronic ones, as much of human mental activity as possible, and perhaps eventually to improve upon human abilities in these respects. There is interest in the results of AI from at least 4 directions. In particular, there is the study of robotics. Robotics is concerned with the practical requirements of industry for mechanical devices which can perform intelligent tasks. Those mechanical devices are expected to perform these tasks with a speed and reliability beyond any human capabilities, or under unfavorable conditions where human life could be at risk. Also of interest commercially, as well as generally, is the development of expert systems, according to which the essential knowledge of an entire profession, medical, legal, etc., is intended to be coded into a computer package. Is it possible that the experience and skill of human members of these professions might actually be replaced by such packages? Or is it merely that long lists of factual information are all that can be expected to be achieved? The question of whether the computers can exhibit genuine intelligence clearly has considerable social implications. Another area in which AI could have direct relevance is psychology. It is hoped that by trying to imitate the behavior of a human brain by means of an electronic device, or by failing to do so, one may learn something of importance concerning the brain's workings. Finally, there is the optimistic hope that for similar reasons, AI might have something to say about deep questions of philosophy, by providing insights into the meaning of the concept of the mind. Number 4. In The Origin of Species, Darwin wrote, "I could give many facts showing how anxious bees are to save time. For instance, their habit of cutting holes and sucking the nectar at the bases of certain flowers, which they can, with a very little more trouble, enter by the mouth. Bearing such facts in mind, I can see no reason to doubt that an accidental deviation in the size and form of the body, or in the curvature and length of the proboscis, far too slight to be appreciated by us, might profit a bee or other insect, so that an individual so characterized would be able to obtain its food more quickly, and so have a better chance of living and leaving descendants. Its descendants would probably inherit a tendency to a similar slight deviation of structure." Knowing nothing of the substance involved, DNA, or the mechanism of variation, changes in the DNA alphabet called mutations, Darwin did at least venture that the most frequent cause of variability may be attributed to the male and female reproductive elements having been affected prior to the act of conception. He adapted Hippocrates' idea of pangenesis to suggest that elements from both parents were somehow blended together in the creation of offspring.
Number 5.
As with cloning, the application of genetic engineering to humans is highly controversial. At its most benign, it is a promising approach to the elimination of hereditary diseases. In the past, the only way to prevent such diseases from being passed on from one generation to the next was for those who suffered from them to be voluntarily sterilized, depriving them of the chance to raise a family. With genetic engineering, defective genes can be replaced or repaired, resulting in healthy babies. However, the technology can also be used to introduce superior genes, which may enhance beauty or intellectual and sporting achievement. Rich people could thus plan designer babies. Another use of genetic engineering is in gene therapy. Many diseases occur because a particular gene is missing or defective. Now that researchers can identify missing or defective genes, it is possible to predict illnesses long before symptoms appear. While this enables people to take preventive action by making appropriate changes to their lifestyles or diets, it also gives insurance companies the chance to identify bad risks. An above-average risk of breast cancer, for example, can be discovered through genetic testing. And some insurance companies now insist that female applicants reveal the results of such tests and raise their fees to cover the increased risk. Once insurance companies demand such information as a matter of course, potential employers will no doubt follow suit, rejecting high-risk job applicants. Number 6.
In Europe, there was growing resentment at the way genetically modified foods had been forced on the public. Consumers began demanding labels that allowed them to distinguish between GM and non-GM products. When the Americans refused to sell them separately, British supermarkets stopped buying their maize and soybeans. Environmentalists wanted proof that modified crops would not harm other species. On the contrary, they heard reports from Cornell University of a drastic decline in the monarch butterfly population related to pollen from GM corn. Then came the announcement that U.S. agribusinesses had developed a terminator gene, which could be inserted into their seeds to ensure that farmers could not follow the traditional practice of taking seeds from their own crops for use the following year. Development agencies were furious. If such seeds were marketed to developing countries, farmers would become totally dependent on American agribusinesses. The resulting bad publicity led to a hasty denial by the producers of any plan to market such seeds. The harmful effects of genetically modified crops on the environment are gradually appearing. The disappearance of benevolent insects, the growth of herbicide-resistant weeds, the contamination of nearby organic farms. Health problems have also surfaced, including a reported increase in allergies and a decrease in the effectiveness of antibiotic drugs. If, as seems likely, more serious problems develop in due course, there will be huge lawsuits, and some biotech companies may go bankrupt. However, the system which has allowed them to gamble with our health and environment will remain. A system in which priority is given to technological development and profits rather than to safety and social responsibility. Number 7. International talks, jointly hosted by Japan and the World Health Organization, opened Thursday in Tokyo to discuss how to contain a possible global pandemic sparked by the spread of bird flu among humans. The two-day gathering of delegates from more than 30 nations, mainly in Asia, and international organizations comes at a time when concerns are mounting that the H5N1 strain of avian influenza, which has been spreading throughout Asia and has recently cropped up in Turkey, could change into a form that could pass easily among humans and potentially kill millions of people. The delegates are expected to discuss and recommend regional and international response mechanisms, such as an early warning detection system for a pandemic and operational support for early response efforts in Asia, organizers said. Rapid containment would include the use of antivirals to snuff out the spread of the virus, plus possible public health measures such as quarantine, restrictions on human movement, and social distancing, a WHO media advisory said. The event is part of an international initiative aimed at increasing global collaboration and coordination before a pandemic strikes. A simulation by researchers on a new type of influenza showed Wednesday that such a disease would spread dramatically via crowded trains. According to the simulation, in a city with a population of 800,000, the number of flu patients would peak in about 50 days after the infection of the first person under usual circumstances. However, when crowded trains are factored in, the number of flu patients can peak 20 to 40 days earlier and increase victims overall by about 10 percentage points.
Number 8.
One of the most important ways a caregiver must work for a victim with a terminal illness is about life and death decisions that arise with the progression of the disease. As the disease progresses, the patient will have less ability to discuss, reason, and express his wishes regarding the choices available when he is confronting the last stages of the disease. How will he want to be treated? Does he want extraordinary measures, such as artificial breathing and tube feeding? It is important for a family and the victim to think about these questions long before the victim is completely without any voice. These issues are difficult to discuss under any circumstances. Our discomfort with death is evident in our desire to control it. On the one hand, we have tried to wrestle with death by delaying it as the dying patient is sustained in an artificial state of life through advanced medical technology. Many people have recognized, however, that these attempts to keep death at a distance have been causing a lot of suffering for the families involved. Preparing a living will with the patient while he is in the early stages of the disease is one step toward addressing his objections to the use of extraordinary measures taken to sustain a living state artificially while he is dying. Number 9.
More recently, however, there has been a completely opposite approach to controlling death, euthanasia. It is understandable for a victim of a fatal disease to think of bringing on his own death. After all, when continuing life will only bring greater suffering, what's the point in living? This logic has been tested recently in the federal court system, and the results indicate that the right to die is rapidly becoming an issue that must be addressed directly by religious communities. For example, a Washington state law banning doctor-assisted suicide was struck down, the reason being that prohibiting assisted suicide violates the constitutional rights of terminally ill, mentally competent patients who want to kill themselves with a doctor's prescription. The intention of such laws has been justified as a way of getting rid of suffering. Despite this defense, euthanasia is often understood to be an objectionable act intended to cause the death of a patient. It seems to me that euthanasia is characteristic of a society that no longer has faith in the purpose and intention of God. Number 10.
Have you ever seen a ghost? Felt a presence? Has your phantom double ever followed you around? Ever leave your body for a few moments? These might not be supernatural experiences, but they don't necessarily mean you're crazy either. As some people experience a phantom limb after amputation, you could be experiencing the presence of a phantom of the entire body, according to Peter Brueger, an expert in the field of the human nervous system. In an article he wrote, though these phantoms could be the result of damage to the part of the brain that helps distinguish between the body and the space surrounding it, they can also pop up in normal brains as a result of powerful emotions, such as intense fear, sadness, or extreme happiness. In cases of brain damage, the threshold for misinterpretations is simply lowered. Many healthy people have ghost experiences and do not suffer from overt brain damage, said Brueger. Normal brains can easily be tricked about the source of an action at a distance that they themselves have the agency over. He pointed to the example of automatic writing, in which those who practice it claim other beings take control of their hands in order to write messages from beyond. If one's own hands do not seem to obey one's own brain, the brain must construct something else to be responsible for the action, he said. Other research bears this out. Amputees often describe not only the presence of a phantom limb, but the presence of the very pain once associated with that limb. Pain that should no longer exist since the limb, with its nerves, has been removed.
Number 11. British scientists have found that some bone marrow cells, in addition to being able to create three different types of blood cells, can also make liver cells. The finding raises the possibility of creating new liver cells for patients suffering from a range of liver diseases, or of encouraging the natural process of regeneration. Nick Wright, head of the Imperial Cancer Research Fund's Histopathology Unit and one of the team responsible for the find, said, "This would be particularly useful for patients whose livers have been damaged due to drug side effects, or through surgery to remove cancers that have spread to the liver, and where there is insufficient functioning liver remaining." He also said that livers which are defective, possibly because of a faulty gene, could one day be repaired using stem cells that have been given a working gene. Ultimately, it may even be possible to regenerate a new liver.
Number 12. Of the many differences between the movie Titanic and history, one in particular is impressive. In the movie, as the ship is sinking, the first-class passengers struggle to climb into the small number of lifeboats. Only the determination of the brave seamen, who use guns to keep back the selfish millionaires, gets the women and children into the boats. In fact, according to survivors' accounts, The Women and Children First Convention was observed among the upper, that is, first and second classes. The statistics make this plain. In first class, every child was saved, as were all but 5 of 144 women, 3 of whom chose to die with their husbands. By contrast, 70% of the men in first class died. In second class, which was also inhabited by rich professional types, 80% of the women were saved, but 90% of the men drowned. The men on the first class list of the Titanic virtually made up the Forbes 400 of the time. John Jacob Astor, who was supposed to be the richest man in America at the time, is said to have fought his way to a boat, put his wife in it, and then, refusing to take a seat, stepped back and waved her goodbye. In other words, some of the most powerful men in the world stuck firmly to an unwritten code of honor, even though it meant certain death. The movie makers altered the story for good reason. No one would believe it today. We have freed our upper classes of any sense of responsibility, and they have happily returned us the favor. In modern thinking, they are just like any of us, regular folk. We behave as if society is so democratic and dynamic that it doesn't actually have a governing elite. But it does. The rich and the powerful will always be with us. We can only ask that they recognize that with their privileges come responsibilities. Social conventions, professional associations, moral obligations, the gentleman's code, all were attempts to civilize the strong. In the past, American society expected these men and women to behave themselves and in some way participate in the public life of the land. Near East Potomac Park in Washington, D.C. stands a monument with a piece of writing on its base. To the brave men of the Titanic, who gave their lives that women and children might be saved. It was erected by contributions from 25,000 women across the United States. When leaders of society lived up to their ideals, they were honored. When they did not, it was a matter of deep disappointment. Today, by contrast, we expect very little of those in positions of power, and they rarely disappoint us.